Good afternoon and welcome to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM. It's a Friday. It's drive time, and this, of course, is your drive time show, and we're here until the hour of 6. So if your ride is an hour and 23 minutes, we got you covered. If your ride is 2 hours, may the Lord be with you after the 1 hour and 23 minutes have, comes to an end. And of course, we are here with yet another depressing topic, although this one is more global.
This is a real depressing situation.
If you just want to find out just how pointless some of the political discussions are.
Yeah, I mean, even just revisiting your high school history, Hamut, you will even have questions to ask there, which are profoundly why. Do you know that you and I, we are having this discussion in a realm literally where the world 3 weeks ago was literally, everyone was speculating these two guys would literally
nuke the heck out of each other.
Yeah.
You know, today's discussion is, today's discussion is about the future of, the future of the planet. And the goal that we're basically looking at, at least we're looking at it from the 20th session of the non-proliferation discussion that was recently held, coming out of, one of the branches coming out of the United Nations, as in, the UN has it all.
Yeah. Yesterday it was, what was the weird one that you and I discovered? They have a specific branch of this.
Hang on a second. Yesterday was the one on,
we had the reparations genocide discussion on Wednesday.
Reparations and genocide discussion.
Yesterday we had the...
Where's my description?
What was that? It wasn't outer space.
No, it wasn't. Outer space, that one is... South to South discussion.
And there's a South to South branch. And today, guys, we've got a... It's actually weird. Its full name is the United Nations Office of Disarmament Affairs. Now, you'd be asking yourself, so what are you disarming? Good question. Guess what? They had a 10-day meeting at the start of this month from 28 April. No, it wasn't 10 days. It was actually a 7-day, 8-day meeting. But it was almost 10 days.
From the 28th to the 9th.
Yeah, 28 April. No, it literally was 10 days.
Yeah.
Because the South-South engagement itself was also pretty long. Now, if you don't know, dear listeners, there is something known as a nuclear non-proliferation treaty. This treaty does not have an end, it had a start date in the 1970s.
Mm-hmm.
It was extended indefinitely, meaning there is no closing time because countries still sit with nuclear stockpiles. If you think, we are in Africa, who cares about that?
Uh-huh.
Well, just 3 weeks ago, we were going to see two countries who are neighbors of each other blow each other up. We were going to see that. We were this close, dear listeners. This close. We're already still, I think, still 90, or is it a minute? To midnight, that obviously being the, what's the guy's name? The doom clock, that is being run by the same guys from the Manhattan Project, to be even more morbid in our discussion. But they usually measure affairs between, NATO and Russia, or NATO back then and the USSR, the Soviet Union. But we did not know how close we would be because of Pakistan and India. I mean, with Pakistan and India, we were literally probably 2 seconds away from midnight.
Here's one dumb, if you keep counting, you're going to run out of numbers and you still be left with, a bunch of dumb things that you will still talk about.
Yeah.
Is it, MED is a military doctrine, you know, the mutually assured destruction, which is what is actually, you know, what everyone keeps pointing towards. Why, you know, nuclear weapons should not be a thing. Because if, and the Soviets and the US learned this much earlier, actually, during the Cold War. And that's actually, you know, the Cold War, it's the reason why I, I have high regards for, who is this guy, for JFK.
Yeah.
Because I'm telling you, if guys like Trump were in office in the 60s, oh boy, things would have been bad. Because, Nikita Khrushchev was not playing games. He was just saying, look, if you want to go nuclear, we can go nuclear. Mm. And this is where I think JFK and basically the White House at the time, when there was still, you know, some degree of rationality around that place, decided to settle the war, you know, via dialogue. And that's because at this point, both countries had enough nuclear weapons to basically erase each other's, you know, each other's countries off the planet of the earth.
Yeah.
And that's before you even factor in the nuclear fallout. Now, here's another problem. The dumbest idea, perhaps, of all is the guy spearheading nuclear proliferation on the UN level. Nuclear non-proliferation. Yeah. We're not handing them over like cake.
Yeah, if we keep using
proliferation.
Everyone is chasing.
Please have one. Everyone can have one. Nuclear non-proliferation is is the fact that everyone on the UN Security Council is a nuclear, has a nuclear arsenal.
But here's the worst part. It's like a shitty cool thing that you started with that guy. So, yeah. He's a Ghanaian. The guy that led the meeting at the start of this month.
Oh, yeah, he's Ghanaian.
He's a Ghanaian. Now, it's not to say that Ghana should not qualify, because Namibia is also part of this treaty. Remember, remember back when you and I kept doing the nuclear energy discussions, Amun?
Mm-hmm.
I keep referencing that Namibia is a signatory to we are a member of the International Atomic Energy Agency, which is a UN agency.
Yeah. But we are not a member of the International Energy Agency.
But before we continue, we've actually got a short ad break coming up.
We still have some outrageous international decisions being made by people with PhDs, by the way.
So when did beer ask Namibia to be real? And we got 500,000 responses from Racina and the other 1,400 who are Crocs with socks. 10,000 peeps like T-Boss, whose nicknames are their real names. And 2,100 with the chops to master a braai like Arnold's. It doesn't get more real than that. As Windhoek, the real beer for real people, we recognize the 100% real. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Welcome back. The time is 15 minutes to the hour of 5. If you just tuned in, you're listening to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM. And today's subject of the Home Run show is that of the recently held non-proliferation, nuclear non-proliferation discussion.
Mm.
And it's one of those. I think it's a waste of a lot of taxpayers' money to attend the whole event because, like, where were you? Ambassador Harold Adler.
But him, that ambassador, he's obviously dealing with countries, Helmut, that have been at that table, since World War II.
Yeah. They were there since the beginning.
Yeah, they were there. The Russians are there. The Americans are definitely there. The British are definitely there. Like you said, all of the guys that were part of this and all the guys sitting with these arsenals are all Security Council members.
Not only do they have veto power is not enough. They need nukes.
Yeah. So that also includes China. Mm-hmm. China also has that. But then obviously who else has nuclear bombs that are not on the Security Council? India, Pakistan, Israel, India, Pakistan, Israel,
North Korea. North Korea, Israel, India, Pakistan.
There's someone else.
Just those ones.
There's someone else. I know there is someone else. I know France is on the security council.
Yeah, France is part of the security. The UK is also part of it.
Germany is not supposed to have nuclear weapons.
Germany is not supposed to have a lot of conventional weapons. That's what it
is. Germany is not supposed to have a whole bunch of stuff.
Nope.
Who else did? There's another country I'm forgetting.
Yeah.
It's not Iran, because Iran has to give guarantees of if they... It's known as the JCPOA, that particular pact or that particular agreement, mm-hmm. which Trump walked away from in his first term. He actually thought that the Iranians would go like, yeah, we're sorry. So actually the Iranians went like, no, we're sticking to our guns. If you walk away, then fine. Go and do your thing. Because it was continuously France and Germany that were asking, and the European Union that were asking the Americans, please come back to this engagement.
Mm-hmm.
Biden also said, no, he won't deal with Iran in the JCPOA. And then obviously Trump has now took it to a new height, this JCPOA engagement. So, and it's on continuously France and Germany and the EU that are asking the US, you know, come back to the table. Let's help negotiate with these guys. We sit, particularly, dear listeners, in a situation where...
The future is not a very good one.
It's not a very good one. Because Trump, I'll sketch two situations here, Hamoud. Trump at the start of this week, because Trump thought he could just, you know, order Putin around. This is me observing. So not me sounding like a fanboy. This is me observing media reports that are coming about the subject matter of the Ukraine ceasefire and peace treaty deal.
Peace.
Every time the American, I don't know if the Americans just don't know what to listen or hear, but the communication is taking place in their language. It's not taking place in any other language. It's taking place in their language.
Basics.
Every time it's just being said, ensure that Ukraine doesn't commit the same particular, I'll use Putin's words in his speeches, at the start of this conflict back in 2022, when he said it's to root out neo-Nazism
in
Eastern Ukraine, where the predominantly Russian settlers are. If people don't know, why I'm saying this, you can go and reference those interviews or those speeches of Putin. It's they're on the internet.
Yeah. The whole war is very tribal.
It's very tribal based.
Tribal. It's called.
Because at the heart of the discussions, it has been pointed out specifically that the entities like Azov Battalion, which are known neo-Nazi paramilitary installations. Are the guys that are actually driving hate crimes in Ukraine, specifically against indigenous Russian-speaking Ukrainians, which is in the east of Russia. So now you know what that conflict is about, which we've always told you for 4 years now, what it's been about. Now you know what that is about, but here's the particular thing being. The NATO guys want the United States to sign directly the peace treaty or be in the same room. But Donald Trump thinks that he can order people around. So, Putin also told him from far, you know what? Here are the terms and conditions. If you agree to them, we can start the discussion. Donald Trump runs to his social media platform through social and says, yeah, you don't know how good you have it, because if it was someone else, aka Kamala Harris and the Democrats, you would have had a worse situation, or, you know, the situation in dealing with you would have been way worse. That's why I referenced yesterday what Dmitry Medvedev, the former Russian president, that was also the former Russian prime minister under Putin, highlighted to, responding on another social platform to Trump by saying this is very dangerous rhetoric for you as a world leader. Because if you think, for that matter, that now in 2025, after your predecessor decided to bomb Nord Stream 1, to throw all the sanctions against the Russian state and freeze all Russian financial assets. Because remember how the world, the global financial market works. You need your country puts some financial assets in another economy and vice versa. So when the conflict broke out, Helmut, the Americans and the NATO guys went and froze all Russian financial assets.
Yeah.
So this is gold. This is gold. Remember our gold reserve discussion?
Yep.
This is gold. These are cash deposits of the Russian state, i.e., for example, this would usually be from the Russian pension systems and social security infrastructure. All those particular things. Every single one of them. All those things. So the EU did it and the Americans did it. And then Russia obviously responded in kind by freezing all financial assets that the EU countries have in Russia and that America has in Russia. Now you look at that particular position.
So basically the war has multiple fronts. It has a, you know, exactly. The cyber, you know, it has a cyber phase. It has a
diplomatic phase.
Economic phase.
It has a communication phase.
Yeah. In terms of PR. Oh, that's a big one.
Public relations and so forth.
Yeah.
It has a world aid phase. Remember the South-South discussion of yesterday?
Yeah.
Remember what the extract from Antonio Guterres' report for the South-South Cooperation Platform highlighted that the BRICS countries have the potential to assist further multilateral support between themselves. Even though I don't know if you can consider Russia as a fully developed country, but Russia is literally on a level. It has a unique level just like China. It didn't colonize anyone, just like China, just like India. They didn't colonize anyone. They weren't part of the Atlantic slave trade directly. They didn't go and, you know, have a colonial office right there, and then they are just siphoning off
resources
to you. You know what's funny, Helmut? So Sunday morning when I did my Sunday morning take, this past Sunday, I did the discussion on tariffs because it was a long overdue talk to have. In between, I was doing other things and so forth. But the tariff discussion was a long overdue conversation to have. And then I highlighted where was the first direct indications of tariffs in human history. Do you know what the British did when they were colonial power, when they were becoming in that massive colonial power in the 1700s.
Apart from doing everything that has given everyone, every country, a reason to celebrate independence.
Yeah, that too. Is that the British, when they realized the potential that the American colonies, which is now the United States, but it's usually that east coast of the United States.
Yeah.
So we're talking from Florida all the way up to, is it Maine or is it Vermont? If you take that whole eastern
part,
coastline of the United States.
So the West was still under Spanish occupation at the time.
And was technically unexplored and unsettled.
Hence all the Spanish names like California.
Arizona, Texas. Texas is also a Spanish name.
Yeah.
Oklahoma is obviously a Native American name. Oklahoma, Arkansas, I think is French because you don't say the sas at the end of Arkansas. You say Arkansas, not Arkansas. Then you've got the other particulars like Illinois, which is a French name technically, but it was supposedly a French name that French explorers gave to specific Native American tribes that lived in the state of Illinois. It's where Chicago is based. Detroit is in Michigan. If you go and research all the names of the American states.
Yeah, because if you look at, far east like Massachusetts, that's very English.
Massachusetts is actually French. Louisiana is French.
Uh-huh.
There was a huge French presence.
Yeah, because every time I see something, a name like that long, Massachusetts.
Yeah. It has an English because you're saying every aspect of that word.
Yeah.
But it has a very French feel.
French
to it.
Influence.
Yeah.
That's where the long history of different languages in terms of, depending on which guy is in power.
Yeah.
Because, one gentleman explained it in a very interesting way that the reason why the type of meat you eat when it's at a farm and on your plate, the reason why it has that difference is because it's because of the French influence.
Mm.
Because, it's a cow when it's at the farm, when it's on your plate, it's beef.
Yeah.
So cow is English. Beef has a more French influence. It's a pig at the, at a farm, but on your plate, it's pork mutton. Because of,
Or mutton.
Mutton,
that's sheep.
Yeah.
But, is it mutton? Yeah, mutton is the French word.
Yeah.
Mutton has a direct French word. I think it's mouton. Not the surname mouton. There's another, the adapted terminology. But anyway.
Now, so we're clear, if you find yourself in the presence of Kavango, that last word, don't ever say it.
Which one? Mouton.
Uh-huh.
Why?
Stay off from that. Because you're going to get punched in the face. I could explain, but,
Is it any kind of derogatory
term? Derogatory as in crown jewels reference. Of now, moving.
Yeah, okay. We went very quickly to a family asset discussion now.
Moving on, nuclear non-proliferation.
So when you had to look at the discussion that emanates from this, when you look at that Ukraine conflict, it has multiple dimensions in terms of where Russia and the United States technically have to work through levels of diplomacy. So it's from economic to social to peacekeeping even, because the UK was about to drop off peacekeepers in Ukraine, and Putin technically told them, if you land those people there, we will consider it an act of war. So Keir Starmer literally had to then go and pull up a handbrake once again. France, Macron was about to send peacekeepers as well, because he was now hearing the rhetoric of Keir Starmer.
Yeah.
And Macron thought, okay, I'm also getting on the bandwagon. Let's go and send peacekeepers. And every time Putin tells them, if you land those people, it's an act of war.
So they're just, I'm just going to consider them as one of the, some of the enemy combatants that I'm fighting already. Oh, dear Lord.
Now, the worst thing is, Hamoud, that these guys will be landing on the Ukrainian side of life. It's as if they are sort of like peacekeeping the Ukrainians on behalf of the Ukrainians, which is once again back to the Eastern DRC discussion.
Uh-huh.
When, the previous Kenyan president sent the Eastern African, peacekeeping force.
Yeah.
Which was predominantly Kenyan. Was it William Ruto? No. Uhuru Kenyatta. When Kenyatta sent that peacekeeping force, what's his name?
Tshisekedi. Yeah, expected
these guys to fight on his side. For Kenyatta to tell him, no, we're not here to fight your war. We're here to make
peace. Do we need to define it? Peace. Keep us. But before we continue, let's take a commercial break.
Are you still buying data hoping it will last? Then switch to Paratus. Buying gigabytes is so old school. With our mobile LTE prepaid packages, you take charge as we invest in time on our network, enjoying the freedom of uncapped data. When you buy a 1-day, 7-day, 14 or 30-day package, you get uncapped data usage for the duration of the package, no matter how much data you use. Explore our range of Paratus mobile LTE prepaid packages and enjoy the speeds of up to 10 megabytes per second. And most importantly, remove the uncertainty about how long your data will last. Contact us today at 083-300-1000 or visit our website at www.paratus.africa/Namibia. Terms and conditions apply. Always prepare.
Olium Nangeshifa, Noahara Kushivifa, Oma Kuro Ekupitira Mohorike Radio Station, Ayo Eagle FM, Enya Mukuro Olongaha, Ningekotafano na Monica, Kushikondo Shapindi, Konorahita Timwe, Heari Imwe, Ne Heari, Imwe Imwe, Nohamano, that is 081-7147-116, Mamberewa, Konorahita Tunatu, Bali Oheta Tuvatatu, Ne Nola, No Natu, Ninge, Dumo Emaila, monica@eaglefm.com.na opomone oshijemo shiri nawa.
Eagle FM, the eye.
We live on a funny continent, people. Yeah. Welcome back. It's just a minute past the hour of 5. If you just tuned in the time, you are listening to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight, and we're on nuclear non-proliferation dilemma. So what's going on here is the worst example of parenting, if this was a parenting discussion, because again, I cannot overlook the fact that all the guys that are on the Security Council, literally the top brass of the International Peacekeeping Organization, they are all not only having veto power, but they also have nuclear weapons.
Yeah.
And then they are lecturing everyone from there. They are sending lectures to the General Assembly over what not to do in terms of, you know, of what, over what not to use nuclear, you know, nuclear energy on. You can't even use nuclear energy to generate electricity without these guys, all over the body, you know, like going stiff.
Mm.
I said, hey. Yeah. Now, moving.
Look, we all make, you know, small steps in miscalculation settlement. So it's known as a faux pas. Don't worry.
I know. Now, moving on. You see, again, it seems like, where's that irony? I have that irony just right here.
Mm.
And where's my example of, you know, where's my worst example of a nuclear, you know, nuclear proliferation discussion? The nuclear non-proliferation, I keep saying proliferation. At this point, I just want Namibia to be a nuclear power. Man, the level of secrecy you have to bring up in that. And also, that's a lot of money, so we don't have that money. We have poverty and housing to deal with.
Have you ever do you remember one of those times when a family meeting happens because of you, Helmut?
Mm-hmm.
When your aunts, uncles, grandparents, and community leaders show up at your parents' door, and everyone is crammed into the living room.
Uh-huh.
And now your parents are there on the, you know, on the witness stand. They have to give assurances of that your character is of
sound mind.
No, like not of sound mind, yeah. But that the aspect of your character is maintained within a controllable aspect, meaning can you be controlled? Have you ever seen such a scenario? That's what will happen to Namibia.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone will come cram in into State House just to ask President Nandi Ndaitwah,
uh-huh.
You know what, if you guys really want nuclear bombs, you must give us 100% assurances.
Mm-hmm.
Even Iran will be there.
Uh-huh.
Maybe North Korea-ish, then we'll be in hot water.
Well, we're here before. Now, the lectures that I'm referring to coming out of the National Security Council down to the General Assembly at the UN over the use of nuclear energy is, now there is something very also even dumber that I found now, that I found in this whole, you know, on the, Council on Foreign Relations website about, concerning this whole, nuclear discussion. North Korea, the world's biggest nuclear threat. No, they're not. Every idiot with a nuclear, but you have to understand that this is from 2017. And according to, one thing they pointed out was that, although a number of nuclear weapons in the world, in the world has shrunk since its peak in the 1980s, more countries now have nuclear weapons compared to basically the 1980s. Nine countries are known or believed to possess nuclear weapons. The United States, United States, China, France, India, Israel, Israel, North Korea, Pakistan, Russia, and the United Kingdom. These countries are called nuclear weapon states. Several other countries, started nuclear weapons, programs, but gave up. Or voluntarily or because of external pressure. Because countries do not reveal that's when they explain that it's kind of difficult to tell how much nuclear arsenal, how big someone's nuclear arsenal is, because defense things are usually kept as a secret.
Mm.
I mean, that's state secret of the highest level. And then, as one of the globally recognized nuclear deterrents for countries that don't have nuclear arsenal ready, there's an organization that was started by, I think, the Polish. It's known as a nuclear non-proliferation, not nuclear non-proliferation treaty. There's one that is, nuclear weapons free zone, NWFZ.
Yeah.
Nuclear weapons free zone. That's where you find, Mexico and the entire part of South America. And you find, basically the entire African continent. You have Australia and you have, Singapore, Malaysia and all those countries, including the Stan country somewhere in the middle of, Asia, among others. Now, as part of a nuclear deterrent, it was a, basically said, there's something called nuclear umbrella. It's basically an agreement that countries like Namibia that are nuclear powers, we can sign some kind of security guarantee and protection, with any of these nuclear powers, take for example China, Russia, or the US. That, you know what, this is our security agreement. If a nuclear power threatens us, we are just agreeing that if we are threatened by a nuclear power, you will come to our assistance. Tell me that is dumb. Just how dumb can you be? Because if you launch 4,000 nuclear weapons, you don't have... Sorry. I picked up an imaginary call. You don't have a planet.
Yeah.
Let's start from there.
The worst thing, Helmut. The worst thing.
Oh, we're gonna keep saying the worst.
Is the worst thing. The one guy that has been highlighted as a rogue state.
Yeah.
Remember, there are two of them.
Iran and North Korea?
Three. Apparently Cuba as well. Cuba. But Cuba and Iran are in the UN.
Yeah.
Only Iran has nuclear weapons between Cuba and Iran. The third guy, which is a pariah state and a rogue state, is North Korea. North Korea, dear listeners, is not in the United Nations.
No, that I didn't know.
If you guys did not know this, North Korea doesn't particularly participate in these discussions. So North Korea technically is telling the whole world we are free to do what we are doing.
I did not sign your agreement, therefore
I am not part of it.
Off to testing I go.
Yeah. Now, North Korea that actually came into existence because of the protection it had from China.
Mm-hmm.
Because China wouldn't join the United Nations. China got its United Nations Security Council seat because of the United States, not because of the Soviet Union.
Mm-hmm.
Because at that stage, the guys were actually annoyed with each other.
They were homies at the time.
Then they had a fight over Mongolia and the border between the two of them. Later on, Mongolia was once again constituted as a country back again.
Mm-hmm.
Then they had further particular differences in terms of who needs to be in control of who, because obviously Soviets thought that they are in control of anything communist. The Chinese believed in Mao Zedong and that Mao Zedong's communism is their best solution, because that's what he said. You can't have your template being imposed here on us. We want our own interpretation and adaptation of communism in China.
What's wrong with empires, though? I mean, it's like everything they do, they want everyone to adapt it. Otherwise, that individual is a bad guy.
Well, if you look at the thing that I mentioned yesterday, in the South-South discussion,
yeah,
where many people were saying, yeah, the developing world is going to drop the dollar for international trade.
Yeah.
But last year it had been shown from the IMF, from the World Bank, from and even historians, the guys that are saying the global South is walking away from the United States and its allies, NATO specifically. They went and ordered more US dollars. Because if I have a worthless, in terms of international trade, a worthless currency that no one wants to hold stock of. You have a worthless currency that no one wants to hold stock of. So what do? You take your currency, you convert it into US dollars, so you place an order, you get your allotment that you ordered for in value, and then we buy and sell in US dollars. Because you're asking me, can't you put this in US dollar? And I'll tell you, okay, it's a go-between. For us to commence this trade, it's a go-between. Yeah. So it looks good for the United States. That's the reason why, what's the guy's name? The husband and wife podcasters on YouTube. I I forgot their names because in most cases they, man, I don't know. It's two people that you see on the screen, but the husband is technically, you know, bullying the whole discussion the whole time. And the wife is just, yeah, yeah, yeah. I know, guys, it's people's marital situations.
Husband and wife.
But I am seeing this on the internet.
Which is why I'm...
In Namibia. But anyway, yeah, so...
Which is why I'm thinking husband and wife podcast is a bad idea.
But they were both...
That's just me.
They both worked in the media. They both met... that's how they met each other.
Oh, husband and wife.
Yeah, husband and wife.
So what happens when you fight? There's no podcast.
Some days she's there, some days he's not.
That makes sense. See, some of these things are not for couples.
And now you can obviously see how things can also go nuclear.
I know.
Positive and negative. Even on a very micro household level.
No.
So if you guys were arguing and the wife is not there for the episode and your viewers are asking, so where's your wife? I'm like, guys, can you just drop it? But anyway, so in that notion, Helmut, we are sitting with a discussion that has a lot of nuances.
Yeah.
I mean, I mentioned at the start, the non-proliferation treaty was extended from 1995 into infinity or indefinitely because,
and beyond.
Because this means that for as long as people still hold on to their arsenals, you obviously will not see an end to this treaty. And this treaty's aim is about, let's stop the discussion of being angry at each other. But there's nothing I can do if you've got guys who are sending warships into each other's national waters. For example, the U.S. Navy.
South China Sea.
That goes and claims international waters in the South China Sea. Helmut, do you know how far is the national waters of China?
It's in the name, South China Sea.
No, no. I'm not talking about that. A South China Sea is but an, is like you calling an avenue a street. It's like you're calling a street. It has this person's street. But half of that street belongs to that pavement. This half belongs to this pavement.
Have you looked at Guam on the map?
I've seen Guam. Have you seen, Helmut, how far? Because in international maritime treaties, your national waters is 240 something kilometers from your coast.
Mm.
I'm using land measurements because they use nautical miles. Yeah, which you have to convert back into kilometers. It's 240, almost 400 kilometers, if you extend it even further. There's an extra zone past that 240.
Yeah.
That whole thing I'm explaining to you is literally, anyone that sails there is literally in that because the next land mass, I think it's from Indonesia or Philippines and Thailand, the next land mass in that South China Sea Avenue, you are literally going to be on that guy's shoreline.
Do you urgently need cash and happen to own a car? Creditors delaying and contractors need to be paid? When life throws you a rainy day, AutoCash got your back. Park your car and get up to 45% of its value within 45 minutes. No payslip, no bank statement, just the car. Moolah when you need it.
Easy money.
Call us today on 061-400-676. That is 061-400-676. AutoCash, it's that simple.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually... to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. It's 16 past the hour of 5. So.
Yeah. So on the aspect of if you're looking at this discussion, because the non-proliferation treaty that we're highlighting here technically has to do with national security issues. In that discussion I just highlighted about national waters.
Yeah.
If anyone ever goes and takes a look at that map where you see Indonesia, Thailand, I think the Philippines, I know the direct neighbors of China, like in the borders that they share is Cambodia, Laos, and Vietnam, because they also have a history, and China and India on the one side. The downside is when you get into the waterway systems of that neighborhood of Southeast Asia.
Yeah.
Everyone's national waters literally overlaps into everyone else's national water territories. So this technically then boils down to that everyone else must have good neighborly relations with each other so as to not step on each other's toes. But then you understand why it's known as the South China Sea and why China is busy constructing man-made military positions in the South China Sea. And here's the creme de la creme of all the particular antics that go down in the South China Sea. And this helps to explain, dear listeners, global agitation in this non-proliferation treaty discussion. Because the countries are agitating each other every day.
Yep.
Every day. The global, in the agitation realm of things, what do the Americans do? The Americans, the British, and the French. Do you know what they do? Okay, the Russians and the Chinese are also doing the same.
Mm.
So the American, whatever fleet, they've got most numbers for their fleets.
Mm-hmm.
That fleet decides to sail there in the South China Sea. Now, when he's sailing there, that fleet, they decide to sail through either Malaysian national waters or Chinese national waters because the land masses are so close to each other. That if you have to measure the 400 kilometers from the coastline, you're literally almost in that other guy's territory. And if that guy does the same, it's literally also the same representation. And then that US fleet sails through there. We know that there is still a naval base of the Americans in the Philippines.
Know
that.
Yeah.
So you can't say to me, Helmut, for you to decide to sail from Luanda down Namibia's coastline, but in Namibia's national waters. You're not even
sailing Orange River.
You're not even sailing on in international waters. You're sailing down Namibia's coastline in Namibia national waters as another country. What do you think that will look like to any nation? That obviously looks like a provocation.
That's what Mir Shaima keeps pointing out with regards to what's going on in Ukraine. Mir Shaima keeps pointing out is that in the very same way that we have the so-called Monroe Doctrine, where the U.S. basically don't want anyone who is with their same level of economic and military power to set up shop in the Western Hemisphere. That's the very same thing that that's the same thing that you can actually understand why why it puts a lot of paranoia in the Russian president's mind when the US sets up shop in Ukraine.
Mm.
Because every member that becomes a part of the Western countries gang is obviously going to house US military hardware and US military military men. Now the problem is this whole Ukraine Russia thing is a lot of historians have compared it to the Bay of Pigs.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's because all the Soviets did was to was to try and establish some kind of a military relationship with Cuba to the point where they can set up military bases in Cuba. And of course, the U.S. was not having it. Who would?
The Americans didn't even know, Helmut.
Who would?
Up until the construction work took place.
Uh-huh.
And that spy plane, that U-2 spy plane,
That
reconnaissance plane.
Yeah.
That flew from Florida over Cuba. If that plane was not flown there, Helmut, the Americans would never have known that the Russians were busy installing those intercontinental ballistic missiles. In Cuba.
In Cuba. That's within firing distance.
Of course.
So everyone would be paranoid.
Yeah.
Everyone would be paranoid. So actually, even if I was a warmonger and you did that at my border, you know, you're just giving
on your
me a reason.
Not even your border.
You're giving me a reason to bomb the heck out of you. You are basically, you know, indulging my interest.
Yeah.
But the point is, the nuclear discussion is perhaps one of the discussions that's going to take longer than the national, than the SDGs. That's going to take really long because there is not a single army that will give up. It's, you know, especially the big guys. They are both so scared of each other that none of them will be willingly, you know, just volunteer and give up their nuclear weapons.
Yeah.
Because, for one, that's because of, because of trust issue. Considering the relationship, considering the history between China and Western countries, China will tell you absolutely not. I'm not giving up my nuclear weapons because, well, also here's where it becomes basically, virtually diplomatically impossible because you can't convince anyone of these guys that, they should give up their weapons because as soon as they did, as soon as they do, their opponents will also do the same.
Mm.
Nope, you are not going. You will have to be a diplomatic miracle worker to pull that off.
Mm.
Because everyone will tell you that, okay, take Russia for example. Like, okay, if I give up my weapons now, can you give me 100, can you guarantee or give me 100% assurance that the US, the UK, France and China will do the same?
And they won't be able to.
No, they won't. First of all, chance of them doing that are slim to zero. If not, that number is in minus a million. And, not just that. This is about the term that Amir Sharma likes to use is a global dominance. It's geopolitical dominance.
Mm.
And dominance, obviously, it depends on who is having the upper hand in a negotiation.
Mm.
Anyone that have nuclear weapons, one thing we have seen the difference between Iraq and North Korea is that Iraq was bombed on the suspicion of nuclear weapons. Everyone knows North Korea has nuclear weapons and no one would go into North Korea and fire a bullet. Now, that also did not send a very good picture.
No, the reason why they can't go to North Korea because then you'll be doing what again? Provoking China.
Now you see the problem.
Yeah, because now you'll be on the doorstep of China.
The message you have sent is, the five top guys at the Security Council have sent to each other is that, if you don't have nuclear weapons, you become a playground for the nuclear weapons guys.
You will.
Yeah, so...
It makes things even weirder, Hamoud. Remember, and I'm bringing you now back to the Ukraine conflict.
Yeah.
So one of the other particular supposed demands that Putin has is that Ukraine stays neutral. Now, remember, Ukraine has ambitions to become part of the EU.
Yeah.
But to become part of the EU is almost automatically an assumption that you also become part of NATO. Almost automatically becoming part of NATO.
There's one, a retired US, I think, army. I'm not sure which part, which division of the US military, but he's a retired military guy.
Mm.
Yeah, he tells a story of how he was, of one of his encounter in Iraq, I think, during the US Iraqi, occupation. He tells a story of how he was, of how he basically, he and his, obviously, unit held a family hostage. Now, one guy actually, pulled a gun at them and they had to actually shoot the guy in his own bedroom. And the question, now, when he's narrating the story, the question he's asking himself is, he's trying to point out is, why do you think that guy was reaching for a gun? It's simple. I was in his bedroom in the middle of the night.
Mm.
Who wouldn't pull out a gun when they have a total stranger guy with a gun in their bedroom in the middle of the night. That's a normal reaction. That's to be, again, this is someone who had his wife there and his kids there. It's every father's responsibility to protect his family.
Mm.
Now I understand why a bunch of guys, you know, who venture into the ways of the cloth decide not to have children. But the point is...
And what happened after Iraq? ISIS came into an existence.
It became like
who was part of ISIS? All those former Iraqi soldiers, or most of them, which was usually Saddam's that personal guard unit.
Yeah,
because Saddam was also a general or something. When he became national leader.
Of course, he's gonna be general.
So Saddam had his own particular sort of like regiment or something like that. And then there were the guys from the other units in the Iraqi army. Some of those guys were breakaway or runaway guys that ran away from when the Iraq war broke out. Remember, the Iraq war was technically over like in 5 days.
Yeah.
Most of those guys were the guys that started ISIL and ISIS.
So these guys were just starting, you know, like, private universities when the formal one collapsed.
And you know where they ran to? A lot of them ran to Syria next door. They ran to Syria because if you go and look at the roots of ISIS, it began in the part of Iraq that borders onto Syria, and then the part of Syria that borders onto Iraq. It started in that little connecting aspect right there. That's most why almost back in just before 2020, why the ISIS guys could take a large part of Iraq. On the eastern side of it, on the western side of Iraq, and they could take parts of Syria on the eastern side of Syria, of that border. So they were controlling that massive area. And the Turkish were buying Syrian oil that was being sold to them by the ISIS guys.
Absolutely.
So it's a massive headache.
I think
we should have silencing of the guns for the world. Not silencing of the guns for Africa only.
We know how that ended. But look.
That's an African one. That's an African one.
Man, are we good at this? But look, the thing is, when you look at it, it's inevitable.
Yeah.
Once there's one gentleman in the, you know, in the Andrew Feinstein, Shadow World documentary that points out that, it's very easy to start a war, but once you start it, it's kind of like starting wildfire. It runs out of your control like really fast.
Yes, it does.
Yeah. Let's take a commercial break.
It's time to win your share of 500,000 Namibian dollars in prizes with Windhoek Beer. Find one of the 100% real quotes broadcast across Namibia, on billboards, in stores, in newspapers, and on social media. Buy any Windhoek Beer, SMS the underliner code to 75050, or scan the QR code to enter on WhatsApp. So, spot a quote, grab a Windhoek Beer, and you could win. Windhoek, real beer for real people. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly. T's and C's apply.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Welcome back.
Where were we?
Yeah, where were we?
You were still talking about, like, for the world?
Silencing for the guns.
Yeah.
For the world. The reference with regards to the Andrew Feinstein documentary I was about to give is where what gentleman points out that, once you start a war, it escalates quickly out of your control. And I think that's something that we should have learned a very long time ago. And if you look at the history of any war, whether it's, you know, you can just, you say, take for example, feudal Japan is, as example. Mm. There were a lot of factions, and every time, the first emperor to unite China was Qin Shi Huang. If I'm pronouncing that guy's name correct, the guy that was so scared of death, he decided to commission an army to go and look for an elixir of life that will, give him immortality. Now,
I know, Ahmed.
I know, like, really?
Is that story for real?
Oh yeah.
It's literally like the conspiracies around the lost ark.
Remember
the ark that Moses had?
Oh yeah, that one.
Yeah.
I'll give you the detail, later. He's the same guy that commissioned the Terracotta armies.
Oh.
Yeah.
Terracotta.
Terracotta.
Yeah. Not Terracotta.
I thought Terracatana. Oh, that's Japanese. But anyway. Man.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, we're there. You were saying?
Yeah. One perfect example to use is that take the fall of the Soviet Union, for example. After the fall of the Soviet Union, obviously this was an empire by itself.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they had a lot of arms they didn't know what to do with after the fall of the Soviet Union. So someone had to figure out a way to sell it somehow. That's when the genius work of Victor Bout now came about. So, by the way, that guy was not only working for for what remained out of the Soviet rubble. He was also used by the American intelligence to sell their arms, some of which were used in Angola. So, by the way, the guy was so good at it, the Americans made a movie out of, The Lord of War, Nicolas Cage.
Oh.
Yeah. That's how good homeboy
was. And also supposedly sent arms to the Liberian Civil War.
Yeah, that guy. Yeah, exactly. That guy. He's the one that was...
I watched that movie. It was a sad movie.
Yeah, he's the same guy that was exchanged. Was that last year with that basketball player? The prison exchange between the US and Russia.
The Russian guy?
Yeah.
The previous year, 2023.
That exchange that went viral where every American was like, so this guy's just exchanged a basketball player with the literal Lord of War.
A women's basketball
player. WNB. Oh, dear Lord.
And she was caught with marijuana on the Russian airport.
Yeah, so everyone was like, can someone explain to me this exchange? Now, I really enjoyed the videos that were coming out of America. the edits on social media. Those guys just went bananas. Mm. So the point is, there's something very interesting about power.
Mm.
As much as you have a bully on stage, there's some kind of power, there's some type of control being maintained. Every time that bully is kicked out of his bullying position, the big small guys begin to fight each other over that position.
Yeah.
So what you are left with is a lot of chaos. That explains why at the fall of every empire, there's almost a series of civil wars before one empire emerges, and then the dust settles again. What a terrible way to live.
But that was one of the ways, Helmut, and specifically why people are calling more for multipolarity, so that there's not a dependence on one country.
But then when it's gone, it creates a power vacuum.
It creates a power vacuum, and then you see a lot of little struggles happening.
Oh.
Now, the multipolarity discussion is based upon... having equal respect, no matter the size of your country. We respect each other. If your tourists, your countrymen come and visit my country as tourists, all good and well. And if my Namibians go and visit your country as tourists, all good and well. There's that equal understanding. No matter that you've got nuclear weapons,
mm-hmm.
and I don't have nuclear weapons as Namibia. The discussion, which has now obviously been shown, for example, like what Donald Trump is now doing through his immigration policies, is now if you as a Namibian go now, Helmut, and you've got a valid visa, you got that visa here at this US embassy,
mm-hmm.
you've got a valid visa, you show up there at JFK in New York,
you're going to be detained for the rest of the stay that you booked money for. That your money booked for. You're going to be detained by the immigration officials. These guys that are shipping people off to Guatemala.
Uh-huh.
Is it Guatemala?
Oh, Honduras.
El Salvador.
Oh yeah.
That are shipping people off to El Salvador. They're going to detain you for the rest of your stay. They've done it. If you think I'm lying and you think they haven't done it to European people, aka technically white people, they've done it to two German teenagers. They've done it to, was it German people or Italian people? But it was predominantly that they've done this to Western European people that had an itinerary. They literally could show you where they've got hotel bookings,
mm-hmm.
where then, because those hotel bookings are obviously in the stop that you're going to go to next, and what they were planning to do. They were detained for 90% of their stay in the US, which was supposed to be 5 days in a detention facility by these immigration officials. Now, I'm going to ask you this, Helmut. Does that not tell you that that is a country that does not respect your nationals? Because if the Americans, the French, the British, the Canadians are all telling their tourist populations, stay away from the United States because of this uncertainty regarding immigration at the airports.
Now, thank you for laying the foundation for my next point.
Yeah.
Council on Foreign Relations. Which countries have security guarantees to help protect them against nuclear weapons? Again, this is in 2017.
Yeah.
We are in 2025. Many countries without nuclear weapons want to protect themselves against nuclear threats without developing nuclear weapons themselves.
Yeah.
One way to do that is through security guarantees, pledges. It's like saying, you know what, I'm not going to work, I'll just depend on, you know, I just stand at the airport and say, here my dollar, my bro. It's just a tin rand, my bro. It's, you know, at least I managed to pronounce those two. But, goes on to say that, one way to do this is through security guarantees, pledges, from a country to protect all allies using military means.
Mm.
Now. Under the US, under America's nuclear umbrella, you have, basically all the NATO, all the NATO member states and other non-NATO member states like Australia, Japan, and South Korea.
Mm.
Now the Japan part got me, going like, seriously. Man, being an empire must be awesome. I mean, you dropped two bombs in my country and you're telling me you can protect me from people that that will threaten me with weapons that you once used on me.
But that's why they and South Korea are continuously, if you see North Korea, shouting from its neighborhood, they're just shouting, That's all they're doing. They're just shouting foul language at you. And then suddenly there's joint military exercises taking place in South Korea and in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like,
really?
Really?
Now, this nuclear umbrella, how assured are European, are NATO member states in Eastern Europe right now of this nuclear threat protection with Trump in office? Like, how assured are they of this security?
Isn't it because of the specific installations in Turkey?
Uh-huh.
The specific installations that you will find in, what's that country's name? It's not Hungary.
Croatia?
No, it's not Croatia. No, the Balkans hate the Americans.
The Croats, the Serbs.
I did that particular discussion 2 weeks back on my Sunday morning take. The Balkans hate the Americans. And throw in that literally after that, particular breakup of Yugoslavia.
The bombing of
the Chinese embassy in
Bosnia.
Is it in Bosnia? Yeah, it is in Bosnia. No, it's not in Bosnia. It's in Serbia, in Belgrade.
That's in Serbia.
No.
Belgrade.
Belgrade is Bosnia. Serbia has another capital city.
but the bombing took place in Serbia.
Yeah, in Belgrade, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Right.
No, no, it's not Belgrade. Just if you look up the Chinese embassy bombing of by NATO. And it was a specifically directed bombing. I'll ask
and then
you.
Declared an accident.
Declared an accident. I'll ask you again, Helmut. Does that not sound like a provocation to you?
And
because believe you me, when Xi Jinping visited that country last year,
mm-hmm.
He explicitly referenced.
That it was in bombing. Belgrade.
Yeah, Belgrade. Yeah. He explicitly referenced that incident of 1995, or was it 1998?
Yeah.
He specifically referenced that incident.
I think that was in 1998.
He specifically referenced that incident. Now I'm going to ask you now again, Helmut. Does that not sound like a provocation?
And that's where the political language now becomes very interesting. Because if you look at the technicalities, embassies are considered an extension of the countries they represent. So basically that was the U.S. bombing China. Mm. Or more like NATO bombing, NATO bombing China. Yeah. Look.
It's an ugly situation.
Look, with a history like this, it will take us a very long time to pull off nuclear non-proliferation. Mostly because of the trust issues between the very members that sit at the highest level of the United Nations. And these guys don't trust each other so much. They thought veto power, and by the way, they play a lot of veto power cards, toppling each, fighting each other's hijacking each other's point at the United Nations, for UN implementation, which is where the veto power now comes in.
Mm.
And, they have all the power in terms of veto at the United Nations. And they don't want to share that power. If there's something that we learned last year from the UN representative, U.S. ambassador to the UN, Linda Greenfield, Thomas Greenfield, and was that that's when we were talking about the admission of Africa and other regions with regards to having their representation at the United Nations Security Council, that the new guys are going to be given power. Representation at the UN Security Council, but those will be without veto power.
Mm.
And everyone is like, that's the mostly useless seat you're ever going to occupy at the UN Security Council. Because the main power.
That holding the place. Holding the place.
Yeah, sit there and shut up.
Yeah.
Type.
You don't have technically a say.
Like, you may as well just remain at the General Assembly.
Could have just remained at the
General Assembly. That's just for status. It's like the same way that Africans, farm. They just have cows for, to show everyone in the village that I have cattle. But without no commercial plans in mind of how to monetize on them. Yeah. You only, when one person in the family, accidentally on purpose, commits murder somewhere, that's when there's a giant meeting and then some of the cattle are given. Call it bail, but, So the top guys,
really,
the guy said,
did you just now use cattle as a bail reference?
Traditional bail. My favorite subject this morning was the accident that took place in Oshana where, Hilux was involved in a head-on collision with a donkey cart. I was like,
I hope it was like 2 5-year-olds that were driving that Hilux.
A fully grown, unlicensed guy. It was just, 2 unlicensed guys. And,
I really hope he was blind, the Hilux buggy guy.
It was around, 7 o'clock in the evening.
I really hope he was blind. That's what I'm saying. I really hope he was blind.
Well, to be fair, one traditional vehicle did not have lights. The other one did. And my question is...
The donkey's eyes reflect the light that you are shining on it.
And there were 3 of them. Plus the driver, there were like 4 eyes. But the point is... my question was, what the heck is it? Like, how is MVA going to approach this? Like, do you compensate the guys of the donkeys too? But back to nuclear.
They do have to.
They do have to.
Because the donkey cart is technically part of certain particular rural communities. They will have to. There's no way, because obviously, at what force do you think a donkey will survive when slamming into another bucket?
No, there were three. They were both deceased on the spot.
Of course.
Yeah.
That's the reason I'm telling you. Mm-hmm. How fast do you think a donkey can go?
The driver is the one that I think was fortunate enough was admitted in the hospital.
Of the donkey cart?
Yeah. The donkeys were declared.
That's not a driver. How would you know that?
Trying to be diplomatic here. You're not helping.
Yeah, I feel sorry for that guy in that buggy. Yeah. I really feel sorry for
him. Is that covered by insurance, though? Insurance. I damaged my car. What did you, someone bump you? No. Did you bump someone? No, this is an interesting circumstance.
But I know something obviously will happen. But yeah, let me not wander into Neverland conspiracies.
So the question in 13 minutes, as we wrap up, is a future without nuclear weapons possible? Oh my God, if you ask me, my answer will be, in the next life, maybe. When more rational adults are running the UN Security Council, not these ones, nope. And not really about rationality, it's mostly, if you ask me, it's more about paranoia.
Mm.
It's more about paranoia than anything else.
Well, here's the thing, Amut. Let me throw further paranoia onto this fire of paranoia in this discussion. So, dear listeners, we highlighted to you, obviously, the realm that influences actually this non-proliferation treaty discussion. Because they literally have a branch. The UN has a branch on this, as mentioned. The United Nations Office of Disarmament Affairs. This particular treaty, this non-proliferation treaty. Now remember, I mentioned that things have to improve according to the treaty.
Mm-hmm.
Things have to improve from, I think it was like 1990 something. I'm just waiting for this thing to actually load up again. So, this preparatory committee, this meeting that took place at the start of the year,
mm-hmm.
This month, is the preparatory meetings, the preparatory committee's name is the committee for the 2026 review conference of the parties to the treaty on the non-proliferation of nuclear weapons, NPT. Now this is an engagement that will hold its third set, that held its third session from 28 April to 9 May earlier this month. And this is the third of the three planned sessions of the committee that were held prior to the 2026 review conference. Now if people are asking, what are they reviewing? It's literally this treaty, this NPT treaty. For all countries, obviously, to have a say on this and give their insights. Now, the committee, which is open to all state parties to the treaty, is responsible for addressing substantive and procedural issues related to the treaty and for the forthcoming review conference. So, nuclear weapon states are obliged not to transfer possession of or control to any recipient nuclear weapons or other nuclear explosive devices, and in should not in any way assist, encourage, or induce non-nuclear weapon states to manufacture, acquire, or control over, or have control over such particular weapons and devices. We are saying one thing here on Eagle FM, but then there's something else happening out there. And this is now where history gives us a good explainer on how this happened. Back in the 70s, when Richard Nixon was US president, the British asked Nixon, please help the Pakistanis against the Indians.
Because the British were losing their grip on their colony at the time. And that was India, so they wanted to maintain the colony or what?
You are right, it was a control mechanism. It was about this control. The same thing that happened to Iran over the oil. Now, in India's case, remember India got its independence in the 50s.
Yeah.
Right after the Second World War.
Yeah.
But India wanted to chart its own international relations course.
Without the British influence.
Without influence, without being babysat or being supervised or micromanaged out of London. They didn't want that. China obviously had their particular independence that they sort of like retook after the Japanese were kicked out of China in the Second World War. And obviously things kicked off there in the 50s in Korea with the Korean War. So that neighborhood once again was unstable. And then obviously you had the French Indochina War for Independence before Pol Pot got his way in such a, in certain situations in Cambodia. And the other guy, Ho Chi Minh in Vietnam. And who was the guy from Laos? There was another guy from Laos. But, you know, before things kicked off there in that neighborhood. So that neighborhood was becoming pretty unstable. Very unstable. But then instability was based upon they didn't want to be colonized.
Yeah.
It's something similar that happened in Africa. But in Africa's case, it was sort of like people were, you know, doing their own thing. So India decided, you know what? Oh, actually, before we continue, Helmut, we've actually got a live read to conduct. And just before we do so, dear listeners, this is specifically a Velvice University live read. Velvice University, this is the Velvice University September intake 2025. All programs are fully accredited by the NQA. Certificate in Health Sciences Level 4. This is a one-year full-time course available at all campuses. A certificate for Enrolled Nurse Midwife Accoucheur Level 6. This is a 2 years full-time course available in Windhoek, Inkurinkuru, Kombat, Walvis Bay, Katimumulilu, and Otapi. A diploma in Environmental Health Sciences Level 6. This is a 2 years full-time course available in Windhoek. Bachelor of Nursing and Midwifery Science Honours. This is a 4 years full-time course available in Windhoek, Inkurinkuru, Kombat, Walvis Bay, and Katimumulilu. Postgraduate Diploma in Mental Health Nursing Level 8. This is a 1 year full-time course available in Windhoek. Postgraduate Diploma in Community Health Nursing Level 8. This is a 1 year full-time course available in Windhoek. Application period is from 1 May to 30 June 2025. For more information, call 061-225-463 or 061-225-462. Velvice University, where everyone is an achiever. So, just where I left off. The historical context is one based upon... So, when India was starting to do certain particular things, they were trying to sort of like, you know, wriggle their way into their own destiny as a country.
Yeah, out of the British shackles.
So, the British asked Richard Nixon, you know what? And Nixon's best buddy. What was his name, Helmut? The guy that you loved referencing?
Oh, Kissinger.
Kissinger. And the idea that Kissinger gave Nixon and the other associates was, you know what? Why don't you give those guys a lovely little present known as a nuclear bomb? They gave Pakistan a nuclear bomb. And remember, Pakistan was literally on both sides of India because Bangladesh was Pakistan West or Pakistan East. Yeah, Pakistan East, Eastern Pakistan.
Oh, dear Lord.
So what happened? Weapons were given to Pakistan. Pakistan... on the west of India, meaning on the left of India, was having a brutal suppression of Bangladeshi political actors and locals in Bangladesh. And Pakistan decided to bomb the Bangladeshis from Pakistan. So they flew airplanes, bombers over India.
When did they get the planes?
Into Pakistan, into Bangladesh, bombed it and all that stuff. Things were getting violent in Bangladesh. The Bangladeshi guys that will sort of like consider them like the freedom fighters, like the same thing that happened in Namibia. You know, you go and ask
plane fighters.
We went and asked the Zambians and the Angolans and the Zimbabweans for assistance. The Bangladeshis then ran to the Indians and said, hey guys, please come and help us here.
Yeah.
These guys are bombing us from the other side of your country. The Indians were like, oh, we will help with certain things. And then the Pakistanis decided to bomb the Indians as well. Becomes a full-scale battle here on the left of a full-scale war on the left. Then the Indians decided to step into Bangladesh, cool things down. Bangladesh declares independence from Pakistan. There we go. The Americans then decide to throw their weight behind Pakistan even further. This then annoys the Indians even further. That then sees the Indians actively pursuing a nuclear weapons program.
And they were successful.
They were successful. So that's where we currently sit with, up until what happened at the end of last month, when it is reported that it was Islamic jihadist gunmen that walked across the border in the disputed Kashmir's territory.
Yeah.
But on the Indian side of that territory, they walked across the border, shot at tourists, ran back across the border. So they walked from the Pakistan side into the Indian side, committed the crime, ran back over the border.
Now, were they protected?
Who?
These terrorists, because if that's all it takes to set two countries on fire, then we live in an even more dangerous world. And usually what you'd expect when someone goes to a different country and commit a crime is you'll talk to the government of that country to help you hunt down that perpetrator, not go to a full scale war. But when the two countries are in a situation that is so sensitive, then it's very easy to go to war. Isn't that how the World War One started? Because one of the reasons that led to World War One, especially going on to full scale kaboom, was the killing of who is this guy? The Duke Ferdinand guy. Mm. Yeah. So it is said that he was shot by a 19-year-old from supposedly a rebel group. And then that basically set, the domino effect into place that led to World War One. So when there is already tension going on between two different countries, it's very easy to let them to go to war because, for one, they are not talking. Hence, the significance of diplomacy. Mm. If they are not talking, then they are their first go-to move every time they have a tension going on is bombing the heck out of each other.
Do you know what was the worst thing of this India-Pakistan situation?
Yeah.
So, all the Pakistani political leaders we interviewed in like the ambassador in one of the European countries, I think it was France or Germany, was interviewed on France 24.
Yeah.
Someone else was interviewed on DW International. And so it went on, and the Pakistani people were saying literally, yeah, but what India is doing, bombing us in our territory, is not right. But you will not hear any of the Pakistanis saying, we know who these bad actors were. We know what group this was. Mm-hmm. Now, do you know what is the known fact, Helmut, in that neighborhood? Is that the Pakistani intelligence were the guys that looked after Osama bin Laden, helped rear, support, and incubate elements of Al-Qaeda. They assisted Taliban because there's a Pakistani Taliban in Pakistan. And then there's the Afghan Taliban that's now in charge of Afghanistan. If anyone did not know that, yes. And guess what? 2 years back, the Pakistani Taliban did not recognize the central government of Pakistan. Do you realize what kind of a...
And that's the world. Now, with the leadership like that, we are really going to get rid of nuclear weapons.
Oh, we are cooked.
We
are proper cooked, Helmut.
Nah.
Do you know when someone is bright on both sides of something? That's like you were here on your belly. Now you've been turned over. You are proper cooked.
Nuclear non-proliferation is more of a fantasy, if you ask me. But then that's just me. What do I know? Because I'm just looking at the political atmosphere. Mm. And I like to read books. And I like to watch documentaries. One thing I have learned is, powerful countries are the most paranoid.
No, they are.
Powerful countries are the most paranoid, which is why they are always caught in a loop of expanding to the point where a lot of empires mostly fall because of inside tensions, because a lot of the money is spent on external expansion to make sure that we are in good terms with a dictator from that country, so that because if we are not in good terms with them, they will become our competitor and they will be threatening our interests. The very same language that you keep hearing coming out of the White House: interest, 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 and every political is basically interest, you know, based. It's just the Namibians that will vote for a political party because it has a beautiful flag. But politics is basically based on interest. What's in it for me? And it all boils down to the greedy, selfish nature that is inherent within within all of us. But 2 minutes into the hour of six, that brings us to the end of Home Run and obviously the beginning of Business and Economic segment.
While we're still waiting for
that's
them,
one scary part.
While we're still waiting for them, remember that there was a treaty between the US and Russia over nuclear weapons, which Russia walked away from was it in 2023? Actually, Russia walked away from two treaties. It was the Conventional Armies Treaty with Europe, and then it was this other treaty known as the Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces Treaty, the INF Treaty, that was signed on 8 December of 1987 between Ronald Reagan and Gorbachev. So, these two countries already had treaties with each other.
Now, in South.
And also understand specifically, this particular engagement occurred specifically because there was something going on specifically in terms of the NATO expansion discussion, which were discussions that the same NATO squad did not want to stop with. They were playing a poker game for the whole of 2022, 2023, 2024, up until last year. We had been hearing from Jeffrey Sachs, John Mearsheimer, what was that? The former American colonel, the guy that was arrested last year.
Who's this?
When they raided his home. Scott something.
Scott Ritter.
Yeah, Scott Ritter. All three of those guys kept saying guarantees were given to Putin that, and even to Yeltsin, Boris Yeltsin, at the start of when the Soviet Union dissolved.
Yeah.
Guarantees were given to these guys that NATO will not expand eastwards to the Russian borders.
And then there was a massive expansion.
Then they tried it in Georgia. Georgia got invaded by Russia.
Mm-hmm.
The same template
that we're seeing with Ukraine.
Is what we're seeing with Ukraine. But Ukraine has a nasty side to things because Ukraine has had a history of Nazism, meaning fascism.
What you'd call a right-wing malicious outcome.
Right-wing? Helmut, do you know that every person, even you and I sitting here, we do have a little bit of a right-wing element in our personalities, which is ultra-conservative things. However, we also have a lot, the other side of our personality also has a large liberal leaning side.
Mm-hmm.
So that makes us very moderate, the two of us, and many other people, like our colleagues also here and some of our listeners. The downside to things is literally when you go and see countries that literally have homogenous societies. What is a homogenous society? There's only one group there, or one or two groups there.
I think that's one of the lessons that, again, we haven't learned after thousands of years of killing each other over the reluctance to draw lessons from that particular subject, is one of which is every time that you start saying things like, my race or my tribe is the ultimate one and everyone is a second citizen, then you are opening, a floodgate to a lot. Because once you classify someone as not a human being, you can do a lot of things to them, because, well, you'll always be justifying it at the back of your head that, you know, this is not a human being. They don't, you know, they don't deserve to be treated like, you know, my definition of a human being.
Yeah.
The entire colonialism was based on the definition of a human being. The first thing they had to define was, what is a human being? Anyone with blue eyes and blonde hair, blonde hair. Right. Now, everyone, and then they extended it much further. You have to be, you have to be white and Catholic. If you were not Catholic.
Or they even took it further. If you discovered this territory and you found other people there, those people are not human.
No, they are not.
If they don't have a society, a culture, a.
That is similar to yours.
And similar in weight or in value to what you have.
Then they are not people.
Then they're not people.
And now, just with that point of view of classifying anyone who is non-white, non-Catholic, and non-a lot of things, not human, we celebrated, we observed Genocide Remembrance Day because of point of views like that. Once you classify someone as not a human being, you can justify doing a lot of things to them. It's the same thing that's going on in Palestine as we speak. Because if you go to a lot of, ultra-conservative Israel, which is basically the entire current, Netanyahu administration, just listen to the words they use to describe the Palestinians. Then you can see that once you classify someone as not a human being, and once you have this, ethnocentric point of view towards, towards life, that, you know what, my race or my tribe is the ultimate one given to me either by blue blood or, by some big guy somewhere 3,000 years ago. You are going to justify a lot of things. Again, the Austrian painter told himself the exact same thing.
Yep.
We are the ultimate race.
Yep.
Everyone else is below us. And they committed some of the worst atrocities in the history of mankind. We have never learned from the fact that once you start using the language of my tribe or my race is the ultimate one, you are down a slippery slope of a genocide.
Yep. No, you are right, Amo. It's usually known as the labeling of the other.
Yeah.
There's always this conflict scenario at the other people, but then you just don't look at them as people. But yeah. I think we've appropriated enough time. On that note, dear listeners, you can catch me on Sunday morning. Alternatively, you can find us on Monday morning.
Mm-hmm.
Monday afternoon.
Sunday morning for him. Yeah. Monday morning for me.
And then Monday afternoon.
Monday afternoon for both.
Yeah.
Until then, you all have a good weekend. And always remember, the most dangerous period of time is where your salary meets the weekend.
Like today.
Mm-hmm.
Just remember that, guys.
And also, just remember, I'm still looking for a car mate to buy some of these cars that are being auctioned by the government. And I was very specific this morning. I'm looking for a car mate who is a Christian, who hates everything earthly and loves everything heavenly. That's the person I'm looking for, so we can put our money together to buy a car. You know, that sinful thing. Thank you. Have a good weekend.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Olum nangeshifa noahara kushivifa oma kuroyo kupitira mohorike radio station ayo Eagle FM. Enyamukuro olongaha. Ninge kwa tafano na Monica kushikondosho ipindi konorahita tuimwe, heari imwe, ne heari, imwe imwe nohamano. That is 0817147116. Mamberewa konorahita tu natu. Bali o hetatu vatatu ne nola no natu. Nenge tumo emaila ku monica@eaglefm.com.na. Opo mone oshijemo shiri nawa.
Eagle FM, the eye. Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build. Why should you do that? You know a person that doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free.